Henry Tozzi hadn't said a word to her yet. He handed her a canteen. Alexandra didn't ask what was in it. She just took it and drank. The water was ice cold and delicious. After gulping down half the canteen, she wiped her mouth and asked, "Now what?" He took the canteen back.
"Now I take you to the Portkey station and send you home, like I was trying to do before."
"Just like that?"
"Haven't you spent enough time in Dineta? That bird can't sit on the dashboard."
He started the truck. Alexandra reached for Charlie. "Have you ever tried keeping a raven in your lap?"
"Keep it off the dashboard or it's going to have to fly outside."
"Big fat jerk,"
Charlie said. Alexandra cradled the raven under one arm. Charlie fussed and squawked, but settled down a little after a few minutes, while the truck rolled over hard stones until it reached an unmarked dirt road. They began bumping over rocks and around sagebrush and thorn bushes. They went almost a mile before Tsotsi spoke again.
"I suppose you're hungry."
"A little." In fact, Alexandra was starving. Charlie was making sounds in response to the rumble of her stomach.
"We'll stop and get something to eat. It's about an hour until we hit 64. Are you going to starve to death before then?"
"What if I was? Would you apparate us or conjure some food?"
"You can't conjure food. Don't they teach you that at Charmbridge Academy?"
"Speaking of which, are you going to give me my wand back?" She expected him to tell her he'd give it to her when they reached the Portkey station, or not answer at all. She was surprised when, after a moment of silence, he slid it out of the pocket inside his coat and handed it to her.
"Thank you," she said.
She looked back through the window of the cab at the back of the truck, but it was covered with a tarp.
"Your backpack is there,"
Tsotsi said.
"The skyhook is in it."
Alexandra settled into the seat and let him drive for a while. The desert didn't change much, and it was blindingly bright. She squinted, thinking about everything that had happened the previous night. "What happened to the werewolves?" she asked at last.
"We rounded them up before they attacked anyone."
"What about the Dark Invention warlocks? I mean, the Navajo witches. John Ambolito's friends?"
"In custody."
"And John?" Tsotsi pursed his lips.
"We're still looking for him."
Alexandra closed her eyes and sighed. They passed a few more hogans and wooden houses, and once a trailer. Occasionally there were Navajos outside, watching them go by. Once they had to stop to let a flock of sheep move past. A dog kept the sheep together, and an old man nodded to Henry Tsotsi as he followed the animals. After another half an hour, Tsotsi spoke again.
"What you did was very foolish."
Alexandra looked out the window and didn't answer.
"What were you expecting to find at that stone hogan?"
he asked. "John Mambolito."
"You shouldn't have gone there by yourself. You should have told me that John Mambolito knew about that place. Your jivid horse is dead."
"I tried to tell you," Alexandra snapped. "You wouldn't listen to me. I had no idea what some spot on a map was. I didn't know it was a jail for werewolves."
"Not a jail. After they transform, they're free to run and howl outside, but are kept within lines we draw in the desert. And other charms keep any ordinary folk away."
"Until the Dark Convention showed up and killed Miss Renhorse? I saw her killed. If you'd listened to me, maybe you would have warned her, but you just wanted to get rid of me and wouldn't listen to anything I said."
"It was very foolish for you to take on a coven of witches."
"What would have happened if I hadn't been there?" Tsotsi was quiet for a long time after that. Finally, he said,
"The witches were going to take the shapeshifters, the lycanthropes, and set them loose near Little Creek or another town. You prevented that."
Alexandra petted Charlie, who was squirming beneath her arm. Tsotsi said,
"I don't quite understand why the two men you left unconscious by the stone hogan weren't touched."
"I kind of distracted the werewolves to get them to chase me."
"You figured you could outrun them with those magical boots of yours."
Alexandra looked down at her feet, then shrugged. "Your werewolves didn't seem to be preventing from crossing any lines in the desert."
"Killing Yachi destroyed the wards. Most Navajo magic is tainted by death. Why did you save those kids?"
"What, I'm just going to leave them to get eaten by werewolves?" When he didn't answer, she muttered, "You really do think I'm just a trial and a pain, don't you?" Tsotsi was silent again for a while. Alexandra was becoming very hungry, and she was relieved when she finally saw a small two-lane highway. Sochi turned onto it, and the truck picked up speed. I was expecting your trace office would notice me casting spells and someone would come get me, Alexandra said. That was my plan. I'd find out what John Mammolito and his coven were up to out there, and then I'd cast some spells, and you'd know where I was and show up and arrest him. That was your plan, huh? Alexandra couldn't read the Auror's expression. More or less. They went past a sign that said Farewell was 90 miles ahead. Occasionally they passed other vehicles, mostly driven by Indians.
Finding a runaway teenager was actually not at the top of our priority list, Sotsi said. The Dark Convention. John Mambolito and his fellow Antini, and some Bilegano warlocks as well, did a lot of damage all over the Indian territories last night. They even tried to call Chinti from Orange Rock itself, but they were counting on the few Auroras Indineta to be even busier than we were, with werewolves running loose and whatever ritual they were going to perform on top of Witch's Rock. What John Mammolito did wasn't nearly as bad as what they probably planned to do.
Sotsi glanced at Alexandra again.
He cut one man's throat, but the other one was cut along the thigh. Can you explain that? Your two friends weren't able to give us many details about what happened on Witch's Rock.
John cut both their throats. I used a wound relocating charm on the first man. I didn't reach the second man in time. Sotsi considered this.
A wound relocating charm is classified as dark arts.
You going to add it to the list of things the Wizard Justice Department is going to charge me with? A small town materialized on the road ahead. It wasn't much more than a collection of houses and a gas station and convenience store, but Alexandra's stomach rumbled at the prospect of food. They stopped at the convenience store. Sotsi brought her a sandwich, an apple, and a bottle of green tea. Alexandra tried not to eat too quickly. Her stomach almost rebelled against the food, as if it had been days since she'd eaten last. She'd finished most of the sandwich before they even got back to the truck. She spared a corner of the sandwich for Charlie, whom they had left locked in the cab. The raven devoured the scraps greedily, while Alexandra tried not to feel covetous of those last few bites. She began eating the apple. Sotsi didn't speak again until they were once more on the road with the town behind them.
It's not your fault Yaji Red Horse is dead, he said. She was a friend of mine. What happened last night? A lot of things that happened last night were terrible. There have always been a few witches making trouble in Tineta, just like anywhere else, but we didn't realize that John Mambolito had brought so many outsiders here. The Dark Convention is more active in the Indian territories than we thought. It's going to cause a lot of problems for us. From them, and from the Wizard Justice Department.
Oh. Alexandra wasn't sure what to say. What do they want in the Indian territories?
I imagine to stir up old ghosts, cause trouble, unleash evil magic. Who knows what the Dark Convention wants, or why Antini do the things they do.
Alexandra thought Sotsi wasn't being entirely honest with her. He was an Auror and surely knew more than he was telling her, but telling her anything at all was an improvement. So nobody was killed? Besides Miss Redhorse and the dead Antini? Sotsi looked at her again. Some others were killed. Oh. Alexander wondered if the Auror would expand on that, and wasn't surprised when he didn't.
You did some good, Sotsi said. You saved Johnny Thompson and Patricia Peshlakai. That was very brave.
Are they going to remember everything? She asked.
Did you really threaten to steal their hearts and turn them into beetles?
Only to scare them. I mean, to make them move faster. I was trying to save them from the werewolves.
I see.
The Auror nodded slowly.
Well, you did do that.
They saw everything. Werewolves and witches and Chindi. Sotsi's face was stone.
And you think they should be obliterated because they're Muggles?
I don't think that, but the Confederation makes a big deal out of the International Statute of Wizarding Secrecy.
Yes.
Alexander wasn't sure what his tone signified. I don't like it. I understand why we have to keep magic secret. A lot of people would freak out if they knew magic was real, but I don't like obliviators going around erasing memories. She fell into a brooding silence, thinking of Hecate Grimm. Sotsi said in a careful tone of voice,
We try to take care of our own people. We never kept magic a secret before the Confederation came.
Alexandra thought about that. How will you keep Trish and Johnny from telling everyone?
You don't need to worry about that.
He paused.
We can't hide the fact that two muggles were exposed to the wizarding world, but my official reports don't need to mention every detail. For example, I didn't list everything you did that wasn't so helpful while you were in Dineta. Like destroying a car engine, assaulting an Auror, and fleeing from custody. So, those are things you probably don't need to tell them.
Thanks, she said uncertainly.
And probably the less you say about Johnny Thompson and Patricia Peshlakai, the better. I am not telling you to lie to anyone, especially not a Special Inquisitor. But there's a difference between telling the truth and saying things that aren't important.
I understand, I think. Alexandra rolled down the window and tossed the apple core out. Tsotsi frowned at her while she rolled up the window again. I'll pay for the damage to Ron Pete's car, she said.
Huh, he grunted. Will you? You have a couple $1,000s?
She thought about the account her father had given her. She'd have to go to the Colonial Bank of the New World to convert some of it into dollars, but... If I send the money to you, will you make sure he gets it?
Sure.
Tsotsi was unmoved, and Alexandra sensed his skepticism. You don't believe I will, do you? He shrugged.
We're used to white people coming on the reservation and making messes we have to clean up.
Alexandra slid lower in her seat. I'm sorry I caused you so much trouble. I just wanted to stop John Mammolito. He killed a friend of mine and almost killed another, and he tried to kill me. I didn't come here to make trouble for you or get anyone hurt. She wasn't sure, but it seemed the hard lines of Henry Tsotsi's face softened a little. They spoke little after that. They drove through Farewell, came to another highway, and proceeded northeast, entering the mountains and crossing the Colorado border. Alexandra had been nodding off, and Charlie was quiescent in her arms when Tsotsi said,
Porky Station's up ahead.
Alexandra sat up. The desert had been cold but dry, but now they were surrounded by snow. The highway, salted and plowed recently, cut a ribbon of black through the snow-covered rocks around them, but the only thing ahead of them was an unattended highway rest area.
It's not a public station, like in Chicago or New Amsterdam,
Tsotsi said.
It's for official Confederation use only.
They pulled off the highway and parked in the lot, tires crunching over snow that had fallen since the lot had last been plowed. There were a couple of other cars there and a truck. Unlike Henry Tsotsi's truck, the other vehicles had chains on their tires. A couple of people who were checking a map in their car stared at the white-haired girl with the raven in the company of a tall Indian man. Alexandra tugged at her white bangs. Can you fix my hair? Tsotsi answered seriously.
You want me to wave my wand right here?
Of course not, she frowned at him. I mean before you send me back.
I'm sure Diana Grimm or one of your teachers at that fancy school of yours can undo a little curse like that.
He took her backpack out of the trunk and handed it to her. She snatched it angrily. That truck driver was right.
Truck driver?
The Navajo Auror glanced, puzzled, at the semi-truck that was sitting by a snowbank on the other side of the small parking lot. About Navajo cops? Alexandra pushed her arms through the straps and cinched the pack on her back. Tsotsi gave her another of his long looks, then led her to a pavilion that sheltered a giant road map behind thick plastic, a rack full of tourist brochures, and a small building with men and women's restrooms and an unmarked door between them. The Auror paused before the unmarked door.
You're a dog, he said.
Alexandra was confused, then she colored. Are you calling me a bitch?
What? No.
For the first time, Tsotsi's equanimity was ruffled. I wouldn't call someone that. He shook his head.
What John Mammolito said about wolves and sheep is true, from his point of view. That's how he thinks. There are people who are wolves and prey on the weak, and people who are their victims. But there is another kind of person. The kind of person who protects the sheep from the wolves. The sheepdogs.
Kind of like Aurors, Alexandra said. Tsotsi smiled wryly.
You could say that. You're a brave girl. A troublesome juvenile delinquent. But a brave girl.
Alexandra found this almost touching. If you catch John Mammolito or find out anything about his whereabouts, will you let me know? Sosie's expression went flat again.
Let you know?
You're an Auror. Can't you get a message to me, Kara Chambers Academy?
He sighed. When we find John Mammolito, I'll let you know.
He tapped his wand against the unmarked door and it opened.
There are two coffee cans on the top shelf. Make sure to put your raven in the first one before you touch the second.
He caught her arm just before she stepped inside. If I ever see you in Dineta again, I'll turn you into a snake and put you in my pouch. Alexandra said nothing when he released her. She stepped inside and found the coffee can sitting on the shelf over an ordinary industrial sink in a room filled with cleaning supplies, tools, and trash cans.
Sorry, Charlie.
She knew how much animals hated travel by portkey. She pushed the protesting bird into one of the cans and sucked in her breath when the can disappeared, taking Charlie with it. Then she let out the rest of her breath and grabbed the second can and was yanked through space, away from Dineta. End of chapter 27.